It's my pleasure to be here this morning to present some work that we've been doing in our continued effort to make cotton plants resistant to nematodes. This is work done at Mississippi State, USDA, ARS. All right, I'm good now. All right, sorry. So root knot nematode, many of us are familiar with Molluidogyne incognita. It's an obligate endoparasitic species that the second stage juveniles penetrate the roots, establish a feeding site within the vasculature of the root, which is composed of giant cells. And in the process of making these giant cells, these surrounding root cells undergo a type of hyperplasia, which forms the gall that many of us are familiar with. And one of the main things that makes root knot very difficult to control is its vast host range. Root knot can parasitize more than 500 different plant species, which makes crop rotation really not an option for control of this particular parasite. And also, root knot is distributed widely throughout the southeast and into California, where it can be a problem. So cotton resistance to root knot, of course, this research goes back a long ways, and Dr. McCarty and Mustafa mentioned Ray Shepard, where an initial cross was made between two moderately resistant germ lines, Cleveland 6-8, and Mexico Wild, and from that, selections were made, which eventually became Auburn 623 R&R, which was highly resistant to root knot nematode. And by highly resistant, we're talking near 98 to 99% reduction in nematode reproduction on the plants. Over the course of the next 30-plus years or so, a lot of work was done to try to determine the inheritance of this resistance, how many genes were involved, etc. And this was spearheaded by labs at USDA ARS, University of Georgia, Ping Chi, and UC Riverside, Phil Roberts and his work on Nemex. And using different mapping populations, both F2 and recombinant inbred lines, that harbored this, what we call the Shepard resistance, everybody came to the same conclusion that two main genes, or QTLs, were involved, one on chromosome 11 and one on chromosome 14. And we could successfully use molecular markers to track these resistance genes in different segregating populations. And so now, as Mustafa alluded to, cultivars will be available, some moderately resistant are already available to producers, but soon those having very high levels of resistance will be. So that's good news. But I want to take one slide to mention something we need to be aware of. In soybean, the main pathogen of soybean is the soybean cyst nematode. And right now, approximately 95% of the soybean seed market in the north central U.S. uses SCN resistance genes from a single source, and that's PI88788. There are other sources of resistance available, but seed companies have focused on this one particular source. And each year, there are more SCN populations that are discovered that are well adapted to PI88788. In fact, some populations reproduce just as well on it as on a susceptible cultivar. And so now industry is scrambling to incorporate alternative sources of resistance into their elite germplasm to combat this shift in the SCN races in their fields. And if you want more information on that whole story, I direct you to this reference that was published in Phytopathology by Melissa Mitchum, who's at the University of Missouri. And so one of the ideas we had at Mississippi State was to revisit some old germplasm that had been released in years past And so after scouring the literature and conversations with Dr. Jenkins and Dr. McCarty, we decided to interrogate some wild race stocks that Shepherd had assessed in the early 80s with our markers on chromosome 11 and 14, with the idea being that these lions that he categorized as resistant, they may already possess genes that we already know, and so we can put them to the side and forget, you know, not spend as much time on those. Whereas some of the lions may not possess these known markers and may be new sources of resistance. And we also looked at one line in particular that Forrest Robinson identified as being fairly resistant to root knot nematode, Texas 25. So in Shepherd's initial work, he screened 471 wild race stocks, and he identified 18 that he considered resistant. And he did eventually release some of these lines as day-neutral conversions in 1988. In our initial work, we did look at these day-neutral converted lines with our markers, but found that we were getting very inconsistent results in our genotyping from plant to plant within the seed sources. So what we decided to do was go back to the original wild race stocks, the original Texas lines. So these are all hirsutums, and assayed them using, see if I can do this, SIR316, which is on chromosome 11, and BNL3661, which is on chromosome 14. And as a matter of fact, many of these lines did test positive for some known alleles for the root knot resistance. However, seven lines came up negative for the known resistance genes. And to be sure of that, we screened 24 plants of the Texas 25 through 28 and 10 plants of Texas 122, 176, and 177. And every single plant came up negative for the known resistance genes. In phenotypic assays, in the first experiment, this graph shows eggs per gram root. You can see that some of the lines that were initially characterized as resistant in our assays come up as highly susceptible. And so I'm not really sure what's going on there. But for the most part, the lines that Shepherd said were resistant are very resistant compared to M8 and DPL61 are susceptible checks. M240, which has the Shepherd classic resistance, is almost zero. This line has only chromosome 11 resistance gene. This is an isoline line that only has 14. And so you can see some of the lines look like chromosome 11, like Texas 22, which does test positive for that gene. But when we look in here at these Texas lines, 25, 26, 27, and 28, some of them show very low levels of susceptibility. Texas 26 and 28 in particular nearly approach an M240 level of resistance, but not quite. And so in a second experiment where we had more reps of those particular lines, we can see, so we have eggs per gram root and reproductive factor, which would be the total number of root knot eggs collected divided by the number we inoculated with, which was 5,000 eggs. And so you can see M8 and DPL61, highly susceptible. M240 is next to nothing. But 25, 26, and 28 in this experiment all show very low levels of reproduction, around twofold, which is very low. Texas 27, from rep to rep, showed some variation, so I think there's some segregation or something going on in that line. So luckily, Texas 25 and Texas 28 were part of a long-term day-neutral conversion program run by Dr. McCarty, And so we have segregating F5 populations available for screening by egg mass staining. And so we took 76 F5 plants of each population, along with the parental controls, inoculated them with root knot eggs, and 6 weeks later, washed off the roots and stained them with tripan blue, which would highlight the egg masses as blue dots. And what became apparent was that we could classify these plants into four different categories. Those that were highly susceptible, they basically looked like M8 or Delta Pine 61, where you had more than 90% of the root system covered in large galls and egg masses. You had plants that were susceptible, but not as susceptible as the Chex. We had galling that was very severe, but egg masses not as abundant. You had moderately resistant plants and resistant plants. And the resistant plants were basically identical to the Texas 25 or Texas 28 parents, where egg masses were small and very hard to find, galling was limited, and in general, the plants were much healthier. And so when we look at the numbers, they were pretty much the same between the 25 and 28 population as far as the breakdown in these different categories. And so for Texas 25, we identified 9 plants as resistant. In 28, there were 8 plants. All the resistant plants were transplanted to pots for selfing. And if you combine the highly susceptible and susceptible classes and the resistant and moderately resistant classes, you end up with almost a perfect 3-to-1 ratio of susceptible to resistant, which indicates this, the resistance may be recessive. So there's been previous work on Texas 25. It's been studied by researchers in Brazil. In 2013, there was a report that characterized the Texas 25 resistance, and these authors reported that it looked like it suppressed juvenile development later in the infection cycle. And so this is a phenotype that we have seen before when we analyze isolines that carry only the chromosome 14 resistance gene. And a report this last year stated that Texas 25 resistance appeared to be dominant in its inheritance or additive, and this is also something we have observed for the chromosome 14 gene. And so right there, we're kind of thinking, well, maybe even though they test negative for the marker, these Texas lines may possess another allele or the same allele for what we have on 14. But in our experiments, Texas 25 shows a greatly reduced galling phenotype compared to isolines that have only chromosome 14. And also, using the day-neutral converted populations, our inheritance that we find looks like it's recessive. So we're not sure what is behind this difference in conclusions between the Brazilians and ourselves, but I can only report what we see. And so, to sum up, for future work, work on these lines will be conducted by a graduate student who received a Cotton Incorporated Fellowship, Ms. Amanda Godin, and this will include progeny testing of the self-resistant selections and the development of mapping populations. And we will also conduct crosses between these resistant selections and our chromosome 11 and chromosome 14 isolines to really nail down if they are alleles of the same genes or if they're different, and to observe the effects of combining these genes on resistance. So I'd like to acknowledge, he didn't make the author list, but Kimber Gorley at our research station who helps us with the greenhouse, Jim for providing me with the seeds from the Stock Center, and CI for choosing to provide Amanda with the fellowship to continue this work. So with that, I'll take any questions. Well, there's a little bit of time for questions. Thank you.